Probably every day, each of us makes a decision or does something that's based on some kind of commonly held belief. And if we really look at it, doesn't necessarily have a lot of proof to back it up. But, of course, some of them do. The trick is knowing which one is which. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tell you what, Brian Uterman is a professor in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at the UW La Crosse, and he knows the correct answer to a lot of these sort of beliefs. He's the author of 25 Ways to Cure the Hiccups, Uncovering the Truth Behind 101 Common Myths and Misconceptions. It's a really engaging book. He enjoys us from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios in La Crosse. And Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Larry. It's great to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you with us today. I really have enjoyed going through your and reading your book. How did you get interested in the myths and misconceptions that we often take as true?
You know, I've had the opportunity to teach health and wellness courses on college campuses for the last 20 years or so, and I always try to make it fun and interesting. And 6 or 7 years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I started incorporating some of these myths. If I talked about cardiovascular health or flexibility or resistance training or body image or whatever it was, I started incorporating some of these myths into the lectures, and I found that the students really responded well to them. They found them informative. They found them humorous. They said my parents were wrong in almost everything they told me, or a lot of what they told me. And then after class one day, again, it's been a few years now, but one of my students came up to me and said, you should write a book on this topic because it's really interesting. And so really, I took that advice to heart, and I wrote the book.
Well, it's turned out to be a great book, and you've had a chance, over the last several years, you've lectured on this and spoken on it in many settings.
Yeah, I have an opportunity to, you know, whether it's locally at Rotary Clubs or Optimist Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs, JCs, whatnot, or even, you know, larger groups and organizations, you know, health is a topic that's important for everyone, and it's something that I really enjoy speaking about. And so anytime I have the opportunity to get out and talk about anything, almost anything related to health, I try to take those opportunities to do it.
And your book is 25 Ways to Cure the Hiccups, Uncovering the Truth Behind 101 Common Myths and Misconceptions. And it's really, you're a good writer. I teach broadcasting classes, and for broadcasting, if you're writing scripts, you always should write like you speak, I tell people. And you kind of write like a person speaks, and that makes it for very engaging reading. And you've divided the book into, what, four types? Four types of myths, isn't it?
Yeah, there's various myths. The first section is on exercise and fitness. So, you know, things like if you stop exercising, muscle will turn to fat. We can talk about that more later if you want. And then there's a section on nutrition where there are maybe 15 or 20 myths. And then there's one on general health myths, things like, you know, if pesticide residues on foods cause cancer or if cracking your knuckles leads to arthritis. And then there's another section that's kind of a fun section that's kind of non-health related. And, you know, a few of the myths in there are whether or not stress causes hair to turn gray, whether or not we as Americans have more free time today than we did, say, 40 or 50 years ago, which the research actually says yes. Again, we can talk more about that. So, yeah, it's broken up into these four areas. So a lot of variety in the book.
There certainly is. And I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. There's a bit of folk wisdom that you've always assumed was right, but now you're wondering. Brian might have some thoughts about it, might have looked into it. I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And some of these, Brian, people are going to say, I don't believe you. Even your own wife sometimes questions you, I think.
that's right. So many of these, you know, people have held on to these beliefs for so long because their grandparents or their parents told them, and a couple of them that, you know, I get challenged on a fair amount, but for most of them, almost all of them, the research is pretty clear. One good example of that, Larry, is eating sugar makes kids hyper.
Yes.
There's probably been a dozen or more studies done on this. And my wife and I have three kids. They're 13, 11, and 9. And we've had way too many birthday parties. We've had lots of kids at our house. And, you know, and really the studies show that when you give kids sugar, it does not increase their activity levels. And, but again, many times when parents see this, you know, they're giving their kids cake or soda or cookies or candies. It's a part of a party. It's a part of a birthday party. And there are 8 or 9 or 10 other 8 or 9 or 10 year olds around. Yeah. And I can tell you from the parties that we've had, you know, the minute the kids arrive at the house, get in the door, it's crazy. So then we don't give them the cake or the cookies or the soda, you know, for an hour later. And that really doesn't do anything to change their activity level. So people will, you know, challenge me on that one. Another big one that the research is crystal clear on is something most of our parents told us about. And that was when we go to bed at night, we should take a Band-Aid off of a cut or a scrape or a blister. And you let it air out or breathe, and that would then cause your wound or your cut or your scrape to heal faster. And study after study shows that if you keep your Band-Aid on at night, your wound will heal 10, 20, maybe even 30% faster. And there's lots of reasons for that I could talk about, but I don't want to, you know, take too much time on one specific myth.
Well, it's the other one that's so common is don't go in the water for an hour after you eat.
Yeah, I can tell you, I lost lots of hours swimming when I was a kid. And it's kind of a fun story, but I remember going to the beach with my family. And, you know, the way my dad's, it was a great father, great upbringing, but he's kind of old school, you know, didn't read a lot of parenting books. I guess there weren't a lot of parenting books 40, 45 years ago. But the way he taught me how to swim was he would throw me in the water. He was in as well, and it would be over my head, and I would struggle, and he'd be standing right next to me. So if I went down, he'd just grab me by the hair and pull me up. But then I would look at the on shore, and my mom was sitting there on a blanket, you know, laughing and waving, and she thought that was really funny. But we'd go out and have lunch, and we'd have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and maybe a banana and some potato chips, and it was, you are not going back in that water for an hour. And, you know, the fear is that you have some food in your system, you go out, or your stomach, you go out and you try to swim, and you would get cramps, and if you're out over your head, you would potentially drown. Now, I searched the medical literature, the scientific literature, couldn't find one case of drowning or near drowning because of someone going back into the water after they had a meal.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I think it was just a ruse to keep the kids out of the water so the parents didn't have to watch them so close.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's really it. Ben in Onalaska, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I know you mentioned in the introduction, but I have to have the answer about cracking your knuckles. Does it give arthritis? Does it swell your knuckles? Is it going to ruin me later on down the road?
Yeah, so that's another fun one. And again, most of our parents, maybe our moms, told us that. And there have been studies looking at habitual crackers versus non-crackers, people who crack their knuckles even for years. And the results of those studies show that it does not increase rates of arthritis. It does not increase the size of our fingers or our knuckles. And it can sound kind of damaging, you know, when you hear that crack or that pop, but really it's pretty benign. What it is, just gas or air bubbles being released from the synovial fluid inside your joint capsule. And it's really no different than if you have a chiropractic adjustment, you hear that crack or your pop. Obviously that's not dangerous. That probably doesn't lead to, I know it doesn't lead to arthritis in your neck. And so that's the same idea. And think about kids, you know, they like to sometimes do things that feel good. I mean, when I crack my knuckles, it actually makes my fingers feel good. Or an 8 or a 10-year-old little boy likes to make funny sounds with their body. So maybe they just like the sound that cracking their knuckles makes. And after a little while, maybe they realize that it irritates their parents, so then they keep doing it. But no risk for more rates of arthritis or enlarged joints from cracking your knuckles.
Oh, that's relieving. I've done that for years, and it's... I've been told, and I've tried to stop before, and it's just, it's a habit, and it's relieving, but Yeah, thank you for
clearing that up.
Yeah, I actually read an article, maybe it was just 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was about a physician who did a kind of a clinical case study on himself. And over the course of the last 35 years or so, he tried to crack the knuckles in one of his hands every single day, and then not the other one,
oh.
And to see if it led to arthritis or enlarged joints, and it didn't.
There we go. Ben, thanks again. Austin and Whitman, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was out doing some fencing the other day, and I got sunburned, and I didn't really notice it till I got to work that evening, and had a coworker say, well, it's hurting now because the sun went down. Have you ever heard that one?
Oh, that a sunburn doesn't hurt till it's sundown?
Till the sun goes down, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Usually, I've spent a lot of time outdoors in the sun, and it does take a little bit of time before you sometimes feel the discomfort after you get a sunburn, especially if it's kind of a mild or a little bit more to a moderate sunburn. If you're out for a long time and it's pretty severe, then you'll start to feel that sting. But it really isn't true that you don't feel it until the sun goes down. But it might take, you know, an hour or 2 hours. Again, if it's a mild case, it might even take till the next morning. Then you wake up and you feel that on your shoulders or your neck or your face, and you know that you got a little bit too much exposure to the sun.
There you go.
Didn't have a ring of truth to me, but I've never heard that before. So,
thanks,
yeah, I've
Austin.
Never heard that one either.
Thanks
yeah,
a lot
thank
for
you.
Calling. Oh, how about Wanda in Minocqua? Wanda, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I had a cure. I got a sure cure for hiccups. I owned a tavern, and being in the tavern business, everybody used to get hiccups, and we tried everything. And I found that this one works every time to anybody. You pour a glass of water, and you bend over, and you drink on the opposite side of the glass, and you drink slowly. And you just, I don't know, like about count to 10 in your head, and you're gone. It works every time.
Well, so you're kind of drinking with your head upside down is what you're doing, Wanda.
Correct, and on the opposite side of the glass.
Yep, that makes you, okay. Well, yeah. What do you think, Brian?
Very interesting. You know, when I wrote the book, the title can sometimes throw people, the 25 Ways to Cure the Hiccups, because I don't even have a myth in there about hiccups, but yeah. It's kind of catchy, and I could not find one published research article that has looked at, you know, some of the more common cures, and what Wanda just described certainly is one of them that you hear frequently, or stand on your head and drink a glass of water, hold your breath, tablespoon of sugar, eat some peanut butter, whatever it is, and couldn't find one, you know, research study that has looked at that medically or scientifically and whether or not these things work. So everyone, when I go out and I do speak to some of these groups, you know, people have their cures, things that work just like the caller said, 100% of the time. And there could be a number of reasons for that. And a lot of the things that you do, whether it's holding your breath or drinking a glass of water or eating some peanut butter, which is one that I hear people say frequently, you know, one of the cranial nerves that runs down the back of our throat or kind of close to the surface is where that signal will go from the brain to the diaphragm, and that's where that rhythmic contraction or that hiccup will come from. And whether you hold your breath or you swallow something or you eat something, you could potentially disrupt that signal. So that's why a lot of the things I think related to eating or drinking things actually work for kind of getting rid of the hiccups.
That is very interesting. Brian Uterman, professor in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse, our guest today. He's the author of 25 Ways to Cure the Hiccups, Uncovering the Truth Behind 101 Common Myths and Misconceptions, joining us from our WPR studios in La Crosse. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little bit later on in the program, we'll be taking a look at airline fees, frequent flyer programs, best use of your air miles, and talk about trips that you may be planning to take by air. Rick Cini, CEO and co-founder of FairCompare.com, our guest at about 11:45 today. Right now, though, we're having some fun talking with Brian Uterman, professor in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at UW La Crosse. And the topic is really his book, 25 Ways to Cure the Hiccups, Uncovering the Truth Behind 101 Common Myths and Misconceptions. You may have a question, a comment, a question about maybe something that a myth perhaps that you've heard or something that you think may be a myth you're not sure about. Give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. You know, one of the discussion points that you had in your book I thought was really interesting relating to coffee and Alzheimer's, Brian.
Yeah, coffee is interesting. If you look at the research that's been done on coffee over the past 50, 60, 70, 80 years, there's literally have been thousands of studies done. So coffee is something that's been studied a lot. And it wasn't too long ago, maybe 20 or 30 years ago, we would even hear things like, you know, drinking coffee can increase your risk for things like cardiovascular disease. And it's pretty crystal clear now that coffee is very healthy for you. Coffee is full of antioxidants. And people who drink coffee tend to, coffee can have a protective effect for things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, can have a positive impact on even things like cancer and cardiovascular disease. And again, one of the primary reasons for that is the high antioxidant levels in coffee. And I've seen studies where even large amounts of coffee, men and or women who drink 6 or 7 or even 8 cups a day, which can be a lot, that might be a little bit too much caffeine, but there is a protective effect there from the coffee consumption.
Very interesting. Jared in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I was curious about, we've all heard about hair. If you shave it, it comes back thicker and darker. Is that fiction?
Yeah, so that's a chapter in the book, and that's kind of interesting. That is not true. You know, I remember when I was in, I'm not sure, 5th or 6th grade, you know, some of my friends who wanted to be able to grow a mustache or facial hair, they were shaving every day, even though they shouldn't have, or they're shaving their chest, they're trying to get hair to grow on their chest. And that really is not true at all. One of the reasons people might think that's the case is because after you shave, when your hair is coming back in, that stubble is it just feels a little rougher, and it might actually be a little bit of a darker contrast on your skin. So people think that, well, it's a little bit thicker, it's a little bit, you know, it's coming back faster, but that really isn't true. And I've always wanted to, but I've never been able to grow like a mustache or a beard because there's a section on the side of my lips that I just can't grow hair there. And for 3 or 4 months straight, I tried to shave that to see if it would finally come in, and it never happened, and it never will, so I've given up on it. I've really never had facial hair, yeah. But that's not true.
All right, there you go, Jared. I was thinking about, I tried to grow a mustache, because my dad had this wonderful mustache, and I tried and tried, and I finally just gave up. It wasn't working, and I came in, this is after a month, I come into the office and said to one of the secretaries, "You notice anything different about me because I had shaved?" She said, "Are you trying to grow a mustache?" Oh, my goodness. I just stopped trying. Bob in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I was just going to say I'm a wildlife rehabber, and being the baby season, I hear on a daily basis, "Oh, you shouldn't touch the babies because mom won't come back," and it's not true.
They will come. You're better off to leave them there.
Right. And if you do, well, you know, sometimes we have people pick them up to see if they've been fed, and they say, "Well, gone. And, you know, mom won't come back then." And we say, "No, that's just an old wives' tale. They'll come back. Just don't worry about it."
There you go. Brian, I don't think you have that one in your book.
No, that one's not in the book, and I certainly have no expertise in that area, but I agree with Bob. I read an article. It's probably been 4 or 5 months ago, but it said the same thing, that if you come across a bird that has fallen out of the nest, or, you know, a fawn, deer out in the woods or whatnot, or baby rabbits, and if you do touch them, you know, just put them back in their nest, and the parents will usually come back. So I have heard that.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Appreciate it. Will in West Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I'm wondering if you have any observations about this new 3-minute workout fad. Well, you're supposed to get most of the benefits of a regular workout by doing 3 minutes of intensity, rest, intensity, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. My background really is health and fitness and exercise science, and it seems like every 6 or 9 months, kind of a new exercise program will come out, whether it's 3 minutes or 7 minutes, or lose 50 pounds by only doing 21 minutes a day or whatever it is. And for the most part, I try to advise people to stay away from those things. Just kind of use your common sense, go out, physical activity on a daily basis. I think the recommendation is that we should try and get 30 minutes of physical activity, 5 or more days a week if we can do that. And it doesn't have to be high intensity. It could just be walking. It could be gardening, landscaping outside. Anything you can do to move will certainly make you healthier. Now, having said that, if you're really interested in improving your aerobic capacity, something called VO2 max, the amount of cardiovascular exercise you can do at a real high intense level, there is some research that shows that interval training, that real high intensity mixed in with some lower intensity intervals, is one way to up that aerobic capacity a little bit, to really start boosting your cardiovascular performance. Now, having said that, I will say for most of us, me included, 98-99% of the population, they're not interested in, going out and running a mile in 4.5 minutes or whatever it might be. They're just interested in being active, being healthy, being able to functionally do things, again, like clean your house or go outside and do your yard work. So I would just caution on those special types of exercise fads or programs, because even though they might work, there's tons of them out there. You can spend lots of money, and for the most part, you get the same benefits just by doing things that you enjoy, whether that's walking with your kids or your spouse or your pets, or going for bike rides, whatever the case might be. Find something that you really enjoy doing, and hopefully you'll stick with that a little bit more. Lots of these programs, I've got friends, I've got family members, and there are many of the programs. They'll buy a video and a DVD and a whole program for $90 or $150. And what I see almost 100% of the time is they'll do these programs for 3 months or 4 months or 6 months, and they'll lose 10 or 15 or 20 pounds because they really do work, but then they'll stop. And in 6 months or 9 months, they're back to where they were because they're not doing that anymore.
There you go. Thanks, Will. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You had another one in your book, too, about if you walk a mile or you run a mile, are you going to lose the same number of calories? And frankly, you will lose a few more if you run a mile.
Sure. Over the last 10 or 15 years, I've heard many people say, even in kind of the exercise science area, that if you walk a mile or run a mile, you burn about the same calories. And there's a big study done at Syracuse University in their human performance lab, where they brought in research participants and they had them walk a mile at 3 miles an hour or run a mile at 6 miles an hour. And the walkers burned about 80 calories walking the mile, and the runners burned about 115 calories running. So it is true that you burn extra calories when you run as compared to walking. Now, as an exercise professional, would I tell people that you're going to burn extra calories when you're running, so you should always run? Absolutely not. But it is true that if you do run, whether it's a mile or 3 miles or 5 miles, you will burn a few additional calories as compared to walking that same distance.
Charlie in Milwaukee. Hello, thank you for calling.
Hi. It's funny, I'm actually on the way to an infusion right now, and I was listening to the radio. I have an autoimmune disease, and people always say, autoimmune diseases can be caused by being too cleanly. And I was wondering what your thoughts were.
I've heard that you get exposed to dirt and so forth as a kid, as you're growing up, that this is the theory was that you get exposed to some of those. It's a little like getting a shot. The body sort of slowly develops.
I've heard that as well, Larry. Like individuals who their parents aren't really on top of them a lot when they're kids, and they're protecting them, and kids who get out and they play in the dirt and they eat it sometimes and they're exposed to all kinds of things. That's not a chapter in the book, and that's something I haven't looked into extensively, but I have read that those individuals have slightly stronger immune systems than as they get into preteen, teenage, and, you know, early 20s and 30s as well. So I think there is a bit of truth to that, but that's not something that I've written about.
There you go, Charlie. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Here's one, an email from Chris in Trempealeau. Here's the old adage, liquor before beer, you're in the clear. Beer before liquor, never been sicker. Any truth to that one?
You know, I have to be honest with you. I'm writing a second book right now, and that will be in the second book, but I have not written that chapter yet. I can tell you I have had a little bit of experience with drinking alcohol as I was growing up, and I've tried them both ways, and I've never experienced one will get you more intoxicated than the other.
Or sicker. I mean, they can get just as sick one way versus the other. Oh, man. The number to call in with your questions or comments, 1-800-642-1234. We got open lines. Get you on pretty quickly here. Maybe you have a question about a myth or at least something you've heard, and you want to know if Brian Utterman thinks it's true or not. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, another one that I remember well, and this, you know, I've been around a few years now, and I heard this back when I was quite a bit younger from my mother, don't sit too close to the TV because it'll damage your vision. And I could never figure out exactly why that would work that way. But
yeah, so whether it's sitting too close to the TV or whether it's reading in low light, again, most of our parents yelled at us for that. The fear was that you would damage your vision and you wouldn't be able to see as well. And there's really no evidence to support that idea. Now, if you are sitting very close to the TV or if you are reading in low light, sometimes that can lead to eye strain. So your eyes could get a little dry, maybe irritated, uncomfortable. They might get red. And that might lead people to think that, well, that's not good for my vision. But if that is occurring, you just stop watching TV or you stop reading in the low light. And usually within 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour max, your eyes start to feel better. So no fear there. If when my wife and I, when one of our kids was, I'm not sure, 4 or 5 years old, our oldest is now 13. So this was quite a few years ago, but I remember walking into his bedroom one night, and I was just going to check on him, and he was under the covers with a flashlight reading a book, and I just about panicked because, oh my gosh, that can't be good for his eyes. You know, it's going to cause problems with his vision, but there's really no research to back that up.
Okay. Jim in Berlin. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, good afternoon. I got a question. My dad's still alive. I'm 41 years old, and he's been telling me this for the last 35 years. He says, quit drinking liquids when you eat your food and during mealtime. All it's going to do is make you fat. And I'm going, I don't know, it might be true, might not be true. I've never really listened to him, but I don't know if there's any truth to it or not.
Drinking liquids will make you fat.
Nope, I have never heard that. And, I mean, that's an interesting one. So, really, to my knowledge, there's no connection there between eating food and then drinking liquid during a mealtime. Now, there is a chapter in the new book about drinking a little bit of water before you eat. And actually, that does lead to us consuming fewer calories. So, you know, we've heard people say that before you eat a meal, have a big glass of water, and you'll tend to eat a little bit less. Some people use that as a way to potentially decrease their caloric intake and maybe lose a few pounds in a healthy way. And that really is true. Studies have looked at that. If folks drink one or two glasses of water before they have a meal, generally they'll consume less calories during that meal, whether it's 100 or 200, 300 calories. So that one is true.
All right. There we go. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for calling. Neil in Madison. Hello.
Oh, hi. Regarding the liquor and beer rhyme, I asked my college a buddy about that. He was a bartender, bartended his way through college, about what's going on with that. And he said, well, it has to do with the fact that you, if you get a little drunk on beer first and then you start drinking hard liquor, you're likely to drink way more than your limit and wind up being sick. Whereas if you always remember at the end of the night to taper off and start drinking beer because it builds you up and has a lot less alcohol per, you know, as a percentage per volume.
You know that?
Less likely to get sick.
You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Sure. So,
if you...
straight from a bartender who that's the authority.
You know, it makes sense to me because, but if you consume the same amount, you know, let's say the same volume of whiskey, let's say, and beer in terms of alcohol, it shouldn't make any difference, should it?
I mean, no, it shouldn't make any difference at all.
But I certainly see Neil's idea that if you start drinking a whole lot more alcohol if you've drunk beer and sort of get a little tipsy, I could see where that'll make you sicker because you're actually consuming a lot more alcohol.
Yep.
So that makes sense. Thanks, Neil. Sybil and Cable, it's your turn. Hi, Sybil.
My call. My question is, does caffeine leach calcium from your bones?
Hmm.
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, that's hung around a while.
And that is one I have to say I really don't know. That's not a chapter in the book, and that's one that I haven't looked into, but I'm going to write that down, and I think it will be a chapter in a future book. So don't want to talk about it if I don't know about it, and I really don't. So apologize, I can't answer that one.
But it'll be in volume. So you're already working on volume two.
Yep, it's about halfway done, so I'm hoping in another 6 or 9 months that one will be out.
And this one has done well, your first book here, by the way?
Yep. Yeah, again, I think it's a topic that people like. It's fun, and I think that's one of the reasons, you know, I've sold a few copies of the book. And I did write it in a way that was kind of a conversational tone or a conversational style. So it's pretty easy to read. I hate to say this, but it's kind of a good bathroom reader, you know?
You know what I thought, Brian? I thought this should be... I should be able to have access to it online.
Oh, yeah.
An e-version, because how many times have I sat and argued with people about some of these topics?
And
yeah. It's been nice just to say, oh, wait a minute, go to my phone and look up your book and find the proper answer.
Oh, yeah, that's great advice. Thanks.
Mark in New London, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My question is in regard to exercising. I exercise on a regular basis, and I use the same machine when I exercise. And I've heard recently that if you just keep exercising on the same machines and the same muscles, eventually the benefit from the exercise for your body just isn't as great.
Yeah, you know, there is a little bit of truth to that. I think variety is really good, whether you're doing cardiovascular exercise or resistance training, because it is true that your body adapts to what you're doing. So, you know, in regards to cardiovascular exercise, can you do some walking and can you do some running and can you throw in a swim, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks? Can you get on an elliptical machine? Can you do the Stairmaster? So I think variety is good. Same thing with resistance training. If you go into the gym and you do the same exercise with the same weight every single time, you're still going to get some benefit from that. But if you switch things up, whether it's the amount that you're doing, the time, the variety, you know, doing different activities, that will lead to some additional benefits, again, because your body, the muscles, your joints, very adaptable. So after 3 months or 6 months, and you're, again, maybe you're doing resistance training, you go to the gym, your body pretty much knows what it's going to be doing or what you're going to be doing. So to switch that up a little bit, progression, you know, maybe lifting a little bit more or switching up the exercises done in a safe way is something that I would recommend and I strongly believe in.
Hmm. Thanks, Mark. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Dennis in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. As a child, if I would make faces at my brothers or sisters, my mom would always tell me, don't do that because your face will stay like that. So I'm wondering if, would I be a better looking man today had I not made all those faces?
That's kind of a funny one. That's not a chapter in the book, but I can tell you I made lots and lots of faces when I was a kid, and I still make some now. My kids make lots of them, but that one's not true. So your face doesn't stay that way, when you make those faces.
Okay, so I'm as good looking as I would have ever been.
Yeah.
It's as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, as good as you're going to get, Dennis. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, my goodness. And I tell you what, Brian, this has been great fun. And your next book is going to be out probably 6 months or so.
Yeah, 6 to 9 months.
6 to 9 months. So we're certainly going to have you back for that. But it's been great fun talking with you. Are you out peddling the book a little bit, reading from it or talking about it anywhere?
I've got a speaking at a vital aging conference in La Crosse over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And just love to have the opportunity to get out and speak to a lot of community groups, a lot of the Rotary Lions clubs and things like that. So I always enjoy those opportunities.
Yeah, I do too. Thanks, Brian, so much. I appreciate it very much. And I hope we will have a chance to talk again.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
Brian Uterman is a professor in the Department of Exercise and Sports Science at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Take a look at his book. The title is 25 Ways to Cure the Hiccups, Uncovering the Truth Behind 101 Common Myths and Misconceptions. And I don't know, how many did we cover today? 10 or 15 or something like that. There's still about 100 or so that we haven't talked about, and you will find them in the book, like eating chocolate, potato chips, and other oil and greasy foods. Do they make acne worse? Well, look it up in the book. Coming up, we're going to take a look at air travel with Rick Seeney, CEO and co-founder of FareCompare.com.